I will. If you are here for the first time in a while, or if you're visiting, we have been working our way through the book, I Will, by Tom Rainer, and it is a book that encourages us as Christians to not just show up and to be members, and not just to show up and to be attenders, but to be people who are doing something. And this week, we're going to look at the idea that I will go. I will go. Now, what does that mean for us? I remember growing up in the church, seeing a book on the shelf in the church library that said, "Go ye means go me." And the idea behind that is, a lot of times when we think of going, we assume that to be something that other folks do. If you have a bulletin this morning, there's a calendar on the front side of the page, on the left side, and then below that, there are some mission works we support. Those are the people who go. That's their job, that's what they do. And sometimes we can very easily get ourselves into that mode and start thinking about, when we read about going in Scripture, that that doesn't involve me so much. And I would challenge you, and I think Rainer challenges really well within this chapter of the book, that was never what God intended. That going was to be something that was done by a select few, and everybody else just kind of showed up or put money in the basket, and that was their version of going. In Acts 1, in verse 8, we find Jesus, after the time that was mentioned, that Dave mentioned a few minutes ago, about to ascend into heaven, and he's going to leave them with a message. He's told the apostles that the Holy Spirit's going to come on them, and they're going to have power, and it's going to be this very unusual occasion. And he ends verse 8 by saying, "You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and in Judea, and in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth." Which raises the question for us this morning, what is our Jerusalem? Because for most of us, we're not going to start our mission in Jerusalem. We're not going to go there to a faraway place to start. So what is our Jerusalem? And I think we have several Jerusalems for us here today. As a church, our Jerusalem is the surrounding area here of our facility. Now, interestingly enough, and I don't know what this says about us or our community or how things work now, there are a very small number of people here this morning that live close to this building. If you were to put a map of Eugene up here, and I thought about doing this but decided not to, I don't want to give everybody's home locations away, but if you were to put a map of Eugene up here and put some pins on there of where people live that are a mile or two away from this building, there are not very many pins. Now, we have a lot of folks from Eugene, but they're all kind of down in that other part of town where the church used to be. We have a lot of folks from Springfield. We have folks that go further out than that. We have folks out on the west side of town. We have people from all over the place. We have people that's quite a ways south of here. But right around this area, we don't have a lot of folks. And so that creates challenges for us in a number of ways, because although there are church neighbors, you guys don't spend all your time here. And so they're really not your neighbors. This is not necessarily your Jerusalem. Now, I hope that we can do things as a church to reach out to our neighborhood. And we try hard to be good neighbors. We try to, when there are concerns among the neighborhood, we try to listen to those things. If there are things we can do to help out, we try to do that. Something like our trunk or treat that's coming out. I hope that there are kids who live nearby that will come and be a part of that. But for you, what is your Jerusalem? And I would say for you, it starts probably next door and gradually works its way out from there. In your workplace tomorrow, it starts, if you're a cubicle dweller like so many, it starts in the next cubicle. If you are a teacher, it starts with the students. If you are whatever you may be in your occupation, it starts with those people that you encounter each day. And again, our culture sets up some barriers to that, because there are places where this kind of talk is not necessarily welcome. And then our challenge becomes, how do we bring the gospel to people? So our Jerusalem, I think, begins in Eugene or in Springfield or in Cottage Grove or wherever you may be, and kind of gradually works its way out from there. Now, the other story we want to look at this morning is in chapter 4. And you will find Peter and John in chapter 4, and they are in prison. Not in prison yet, they're before the Sanhedrin, and they are being warned about the things that they are doing. And what are the things they are doing? And we think of all the things we might get in trouble with the law for, and this is probably not real high on our list, but the problem with these guys is they keep talking about Jesus. They keep talking about the story. They keep talking about the things that they have heard, the things that they have seen. And it is such an incredible story, they cannot help but share it. And so I want you to think for this for a minute before you read too far ahead of me. The stories that you can't help but share, what are they? You know, I think we experience a lot of things like that in our culture. Now, sometimes it is something amazing that you have seen. I watched way too much college football yesterday. I saw a lot of amazing plays. And if you were a football person and we start talking about football, we probably would have some common things that we might run across that we would discuss. I made the mistake of going online in the last couple days. There's a lot of politics going on, isn't there? I'm so ready for this thing to be over. I cannot begin to explain to you, and a lot of you probably feel the same way. I'm amazed with a couple things as I looked at my computer over the last couple days. People share a lot of things, don't they? And if you're not an online person, there are other ways this happens. When I lived in Searcy, there was a restaurant downtown on the square, right across from the courthouse, Bobby's Diner. And if you walked into Bobby's Diner at 7 on any weekday morning, you would find tables full of people discussing local politics and everything that was going on, all that stuff. And everybody who was in the know was kind of around Bobby's. And you would hear all kinds of stuff. Here, I think we probably have things like that too. We have a lot of that online. We have a lot of that where maybe it's letters to the editor if you want to go the newspaper route, but we have a lot of places where people tend to share the things that they are thinking about, the things they care about, the things they're concerned about. I have a friend, Ben, who is an associate minister in Tacoma. He had a Facebook status yesterday that said, you know, in America, you do have the right to remain silent, and that's not just a legal thing. And I thought to myself, and Ben is an instigator, which makes me laugh that he said that, but I thought to myself, this is kind of what I've been doing lately online. I've not been saying a whole lot because I have thoughts and I have ideas, and I don't know which ones I should share and which ones I shouldn't. But when it comes to so much of the politics and things that are going on, I've watched everyone's opinion about both candidates. I've watched everyone's opinion about whether the tax should pass or not pass. I've watched everyone's opinion about everything that you can think of. And what I've not seen a whole lot is anyone's opinion about the gospel. Oh no, he went there. We don't talk about this. And if we cared about this, and if we were concerned about this, and if we truly believed, as Jesus said, Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Now, if the lost still exist today, 2,000 years later, and I assume they do, this is a big deal. You know, we are, the one thing I've seen over the last couple days that has been positive, that has been shared, that has come from negative, of course, is people concerned about those affected by Hurricane Matthew. People are concerned about Haiti, people are concerned about Florida and the Carolinas and the Bahamas and all these places where that hurricane has had some kind of an effect. And that, I love to see people rally around things like that. But it shouldn't take that. And that, as bad as it is, they will rebuild. They will clear the roads. They will rebuild the roads that have to be rebuilt. They will rebuild the homes that need to be rebuilt. And over time, that will begin to come back. The lost, that's an eternal thing. Do we really care about the lost? Now, a caveat here for those who are visiting. We don't sit around here when you're not here and talk about the lost and how much better we are. At least I've never heard that conversation. The idea of the lost is not one we're excited about. It's not one we relish. It's not one that we're so glad we're in a better state than those who are lost or anything like that. The idea of the lost is something that we are concerned about. And I will admit to you that our action does not always show that concern, but we don't want people to be lost any more than we want people to be in danger from a hurricane or anything else. We want people to be saved and to be found. And so if we do, this idea of going is huge. We must go. Our belief and our action must coincide here. And if we believe that there are those that are lost, then we must go and we must do something about that. So we find Peter and John. And Peter and John are in trouble with the Sanhedrin, which is the ruling council of the Jews, because they are talking about Jesus, and the ruling council doesn't want Jesus being talked about because they want this movement to be done. They want it to be over with. They want their power back. They want everything to go back to the way it was. And so they have a simple request of Peter and John. They say to Peter and John, you may go on your way, you may have a happy life, you may continue on with things, and we will get out of your hair if only one thing, you will stop talking about this. And it brings the question, I think, to all of us, if the authorities had us, and they said, there is this one thing that if you will just stop talking about this thing, then we can let you go. Do we have anything that we care that much about, that we talk that much about, that we wouldn't be willing to stop? Or could they even have accused us of this in the first place, that we talk about any of this? Peter and John's reply is not what so many people's reply would be, which is, okay, yeah, we'll stop. We like freedom. Surely somebody else will pick this up and talk about it. Or maybe we'll still talk about it here and there, but we'll try to be on the down low. We'll keep more quiet about it. I think of my friend Brandon Edwards, who is a minister in Texas now. He spent several years in China. And I think I've mentioned this to you before, if you've been here for a while. He had a church in his apartment, because that's all you could do in China. And he was there, and he was teaching English, and he was also helping with this church in his apartment. And they would show up at different times so as not to draw attention. And so you'd have this family was supposed to show up this time, and this family would show up 7 minutes later, maybe 20 minutes later. So they'd have some time allotted just for everybody showing up. And then they would finally get together. And if there was a knock at the door, everybody froze. Because they never knew, is this going to be the time that the police have found us out? And one Sunday, there was a knock at the door, and everybody froze for a second, and somebody went to the door, and somebody was just running late that day. Everybody could breathe easier again. What if our lives with the gospel were like this? This is what Peter and John are experiencing, this kind of thing. And so they say, just stop talking about it. And their response in verse 19 of Acts 4 is, Peter and John replied, judge for yourselves whether it is right in God's sight to obey you rather than God. They look at this not as, are we going to talk about it or not talk about it? They look at it as, if we talk about it, we're obeying God. If we don't talk about it, we're obeying you. And maybe we should start looking at it that way. If we talk about it, we're obeying God. This is part of our obedience to God, is to talk about the story. For we cannot help but speaking about what we have seen and heard. We cannot help speaking about it. And I've given you examples of things through culture that we do this with, whether it's marathon running or whatever thing you're selling in the multi-level thing, or the Ducks, or the Beavers, or the Tide, or the Broncos, or our sports teams, or our politics, or whatever. We have lots of things that we tend to not be able to help speaking about. This should be right up at the top of the list. We cannot help but tell this story because it is the best story we've ever had. It is the best story that's ever happened to us. It has had the most impact on our lives. We owe eternity to this story. And because of all of those things, we cannot help but speaking about it. And yet, here we are. And we don't speak about it. Now, there are, and in the chapter, I totally agree with the things he has to say here. Rainer finds four objections to God's call to go, which is, if you sit there today, or if I stand here today, and we think to ourselves, okay, that all sounds fine, and I get it, and I probably should tell the story more than I do, but here are the reasons I really don't want to do that when it comes down to it. Number one, this is not my spiritual gift. I am not a speaker. There are people that can do that. There are people that can't. People's number one or two fear is public speaking every time they do those surveys. People don't like to talk in front of people. And so a lot of times we will equate telling these stories excuse me, to public speaking. Now, if I were to have walked into Bobby's Diner in Searcy, Arkansas, to the table of all the guys talking about politics, and asked them who the public speakers were, I don't know if I would have found one. There were guys coming in off their tractors, there were guys who were coming in from their businesses, there were guys coming in from any number of things who were talking about all this stuff. They weren't public speakers. Could they sit at a diner in the morning at a table and talk about the stuff that interested them? Sure they could. Will you go have coffee with people and talk about the stuff that interests you? Will you, after we leave here, go back to a potluck and talk with people about things that interest you? Absolutely you will. Why is this any different? Do you have to have the spiritual gift of speaking to have a conversation back there? Do you have to have a spiritual gift of speaking to talk to anyone about the things that are important? And the answer to that is no. This does not have to be your gift. This does not have to be the thing that you are the best at. Number two, this is what we pay our preacher to do. We just pass the baskets. Surely something in there ends up with him, and I have done my part. Now, I hate to tell you this, but last time I checked the sign coming into town, I believe there were 158,000 some odd people in the city of Eugene. And we've already established that a lot of you guys don't even live in Eugene. You live in other places nearby. I can't cover all that. And if I could, I would have written a book about how it worked by now. And I would, you wouldn't have to pay me anymore because I'd be making money off of that book and everybody would be buying it. I can't cover that, number one. Number two, there are people that you know that would never want to have a conversation with me. He's an Alabama fan. He's a preacher. He's whatever he is. Don't want anything to do with it. Those are people you know and you encounter every day that I will never get through to. I can't do it all. And I, as much as I wish I could, I can't. So if you've ever sat there and thought, well, that's what we pay that guy for, it's not. And I, don't worry, I'm doing other stuff. It's not that that I'm not trying, but I can't do it all. And whoever comes after me, and the guy who comes after him, and the one who comes after him, they won't be able to either. And neither have everybody who preceded me. It's just not possible. And I will tell you something else. When you look down the road near where I live at giant church buildings, and there are a few of them around here, or if you go into other cities where there are ones even bigger than that one, it's not their preacher doing it all either. It is not because of something that guy has done going door to door that 1,000 people sit in that room. Now, he might be a great speaker. I have no idea. And I still don't know if I'm a good speaker. But it's not that. It's the people who are here. Third, I don't have time. I don't have time. And we can put anything into this basket, by the way. Are we going to make the time to do that? Are we going to ask God to give us the time to do that? Is it going to be a priority for us? And if you ever go down the I don't have time road, and I've gone down that road myself many times, start looking at your time and where it goes and start to realize how much time you actually do have. And by the way, you will never have more unless you try to make it. I always thought to myself, when I retire, there will be so much time. And then I look at retired people, they're like the busiest people in the world. And I think, no, it's not coming there either. You got to make time to do this. Look at how many times Jesus encounters people in Scripture that are not part of the plan. They're not the event he's there for. They're not the purpose he's there. He's between two places. And time after time, he takes time. The woman in the crowd who comes to touch his garment, he takes time for her on the way to heal somebody else. The guy that comes down out of the tombs, the crazy guy, takes time for him. On the way, hopefully, to solitude, he's looking for peace, takes time for that guy. We have time for this. And the world is counting on the fact that we have time for this. I don't want to impose my beliefs on others. All right, welcome to Eugene. Eugene could have written this. This is the one that when I read it in the book, I thought, oh, he's been here. This is what we do. We don't want to impose our beliefs on anybody. Now, the assumption that we talk about it is imposing our beliefs on them is part of the flaw in the whole problem. You will impose a whole lot of stuff on other people in any number of ways. I have never in my life, and I don't talk about driving too much, I have never in my life lived anywhere where so many times I have had to come to a complete stop behind somebody in a left lane because they wanted to turn right. They are imposing their will on me and everybody behind me. And I think to myself, what I do in this situation, well, I'll train for a moment this morning. What I do in this situation is I realize I have missed it. I'm in the wrong lane. I'm going to drive another quarter mile and turn around. That's my option. I can't stop. And I hit that over and over again, and I think to myself, we impose ourselves on people all the time. We get chatty with somebody in the grocery store and don't notice somebody's trying to get through. We talk about stuff that interests us that other people don't care about. Excuse me. We're very quick to impose everything on people except for this. Now, but again, in definition, is it imposing this on anybody just to talk about it? Just to invite. And I mentioned this statistic earlier in the series, and I'll mention it again because he mentions it in this chapter. 8 out of 10 people in their survey. And their survey, by the way, was not just in the South before you write it off. I know he's based in Nashville, but they surveyed churches nationwide and non-Christians nationwide. 8 out of 10 non-churchgoers said if asked by someone that they had a relationship with, someone that they knew, if they were asked to go to a worship service, 8 out of 10 said they would go. So let's think about that for a minute. We have in our church roughly 80 family units represented. Some of those are singles. Some of those are families of 4 or 5. It varies. Out of that 80 families, what if half of you left here today actually buying into what I've said? Half of you left here today and thought to yourself, if I were to ask one person to come to church, there's an 8 out of 10 chance they would say yes. And let's go a step further than that. So that would be 40 families that would leave here doing that, which is one person. Let's go a step further. Let's assume that Rainer's survey is completely wrong by half. So not 8 out of 10, only 4 out of 10 people are going to come. So you find your 40% of our half, and you know what would happen next week if everybody did that this week? This entire front row would be full of people we've never had here before. All the way, I counted the chairs this morning to make sure. This front row, 16 people, full of people that have never been here before because 40 families decided, I'm not going to not ask anymore. And that's if Rainer is wrong by half. If he's right, the second row's coming too. But think about that for a minute. We have not done this for so long based on the assumption that it won't work. And what he's telling us is, it will work. And what God has been telling us from the beginning is, the story is too good to not work. It's amazing what he has done for us. So what if we were to leave here and actually believe in this and do it? How different could things be? Now, don't be discouraged if it is 40% and not 80%, and that means that you asked 10 people and only 4 said, can you imagine, only 4 said yes. You would be in the Hall of Fame of baseball with a 400 average. 4 out of 10 is pretty good. What if we actually did that? So instead of 4 objections, I want to give you a few practical things. First of all, will you go? Will you do this? Will you realize that this message speaks to each of us? This is not one of those, yeah, somebody who's better at this really needs to hear this. First of all, this is what I want you to do. Pray for, and I hope that at some point during the midst of all of this, a name has come to your mind. And if it hasn't, think about it now. You have a neighbor, you have a family member, you have a coworker, you have a fellow student at school, you have somebody that you have thought to yourself, I should talk to them about God sometime. Begin praying for that person. Pray for their coming into contact with God. Pray for whatever role you or someone else may play in that. Pray for that person like it matters, like you believe them to actually be lost and you want to help in that. Number 2, invite somebody. Now, again, I'm a very big believer in I'm not going to save the city of Eugene. It's not going to be me alone. But if it's not you talking to someone about God, this is a very good first step. Just invite them. Invite them to come be a part of something. Invite them, excuse me, on the 23rd to come and pack boxes for kids. Tell them, bring a couple of these gifts with you, and or I'll bring them for you if you don't want to be a part of it, but come help us pack, and you'll be encouraged by it. But invite somebody. And third, prepare yourself. Because if we start doing this, I guarantee you something's going to happen. If we really, truly believe this and do this, it is not going to be the same as it was yesterday. It's not going to be the same ever again. Because this becomes real in our lives, and it will become real in their lives. Now, the other piece of prepare yourself is, a lot of us are not scholars of this. You know little bits and pieces. You've forgotten a lot from Bible school along the years. You at one time could remember those books of the Bible and the song and the tune and all those things. You don't remember that anymore. It's been a long time. One of my kids was working on math the other day, dividing fractions or something, and I thought to myself, I forgot how to do that. I haven't seen that in 30 years, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And luckily, my wife is smarter than me, and she did it. But a lot of times we forget. Part of the preparing ourselves is get back in here. And at the very minimum, just have access. Have a starting point for a conversation. And what you will find is when you don't know the answer to a question, for a non-Christian, for someone who's not, someone who's grown up in all this stuff, that's actually not a negative. Because when you can sit down together and look here and find the answer, they learn a few things. One, that answer's coming from here, not from them. I don't decide the world is lost because I think I'm better. I decide the world is lost because Jesus talks about a lost world. That's not a me thing, that's a God thing. So when we start to find our answers in here, we're all better off for it. Prepare yourself for something to happen. Now this morning, it's kind of an odd one when it comes to invitation, I guess, because this doesn't really, if the sin of not talking is the thing we're going to admit to this morning, we're going to need some more rows at the front, because a lot of us don't do this. What I hope is this is something that maybe internally you start to take in and realize, if I believe these things, these have got to become part of my life. This has got to become part of who I am. People need to see me and understand that this is something that I talk about. This is something I care about. If you have that person in your life that you have been putting it off for whatever reason, stop putting it off. We are never guaranteed tomorrow. We don't know the situations and things that are going to happen. Don't wait to talk to somebody about God. And if it's just as simple as inviting that neighbor, inviting that friend, invite them. Let them come be a part. Let them experience it for themselves and be surprised when they say yes and enjoy that moment and realize, oh, this wasn't so bad after all. I actually could do this. This morning, pray beyond all of that, that we can find the people in our community that need to know him and that we can find the right ways to get that message across. If there's something we can pray about in your life, something you need to share with the church, or if you'd like to take him on in baptism this morning, please come while we stand and sing.